Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Well, Hugh McKay is a renowned social researcher and accomplished author, but we probably won't use any of other labels to describe him. He's not a fan of that.
No, he's not. In his latest book, Beyond Belief, How We Find Meaning With or Without Religion, his core thesis is that we shouldn't get too hung up on labelling who we are, whether we're theist, atheist, agnostic. Instead, he's convinced that the crucial elements to discovering the meaning of life can be summed up in two questions. Firstly, what kind of society do I want to live in? And second, how can we create that society?
Yeah, Hugh draws on research and interviews with dozens of Australians across a spectrum of faith and spirituality, including people who describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. That's a growing group in our country. And he explores some interesting, sometimes uncomfortable and fairly often controversial areas of our personal and societal relationship with religion.
Yeah, actually, doesn't he write in the introduction to his book that it's not really a book for committed believers or for committed atheists either, that neither group will probably find that his ideas sit very well with them.
Yes, and after reading the book, there's definitely some truth to that. But he came into the studio recently to chat about the book, and in our conversation, I did raise some of the points of disagreement with Hugh. But first, we start with why he wrote the book and why now.
I'm a social researcher. And one of the things that's intrigued me for a long time is the very paradoxical, almost apparently contradictory sets of information about contemporary Australia and its attitudes and its behaviour in relation to religion. When I look at things like 68% of Australians saying they believe in God or some higher power, perhaps not specifically defined as God, that means we're overwhelmingly a theistic society. 61% in the last census ticked Christian. Only 8% are weekly churchgoers. It gets up to 15% once a month, 25% Christmas and Easter and so on. But that gap, an interesting question arises from that, as does a recent survey that showed that among non-churchgoers, people who never go to church, 88%, when asked how they feel about having a church in their suburb, 88% say they like it.
What do you put that down to, both that approval, but also the kind of disconnect between those who say they believe, but you know, they don't turn up? The institution seems to be less attractive to people.
It's complicated, Simon. When you say institution, of course, now you're talking about the most negative word that you could use in relation to Christianity, because the negativity directed at the institutional church in Australia is intense. And by the way, we should wrap that in context, because all institutions, effectively, in Australia have been suffering a slump in public respect and esteem, whether it's the mass media, trade unions, the banks, politics, big business, etc. So the church is in there. But there is that disconnect between religion when we think of it as an institutional thing and religion when we think of it as a local, personal thing. Now, you mentioned the 61% as believers. I wouldn't go that far. I'd say 61% of Australians wish to identify as Christian, but when you talk to them, what emerges is a very strong, positive attitude towards what people call Christian values, which does not go so far as to say it's faith. People who say they are Christian would not necessarily say they believe in a virgin birth or a resurrection or the miracles as literally interpreted.
Right, so some sort of connection, more of a cultural connection.
It's a bit deeper than cultural, although that's probably an important word to introduce, because we are talking about a culture that has a very strong Christian heritage. So when people say Christian values, they are talking about something that I suppose Christians would say is captured in the parables and the Sermon on the Mount. So people would say, yes, we like treat other people the way you would like to be treated, redefine your neighbour, turn the other cheek, go the extra mile. It's a very, very high standard. I think when a lot of people say they sign up to Christian values, it's a long time since they actually consulted
with what those are.
The core text. Yes.
And when you talk to people, are these spiritual questions really still at the forefront for people, or have we kind of moved past those sorts of things?
I think there's a soft revolution just beginning, because I think we've been through a 30-year period of being so intensely secular, materialistic, individualistic, competitive. We've been bombarded with propaganda from the consumer marketing industry, very sophisticated, but a message that says it's all about me. And we've been bombarded by propaganda from the happiness movement, saying you're entitled to be happy. If you're not happy, there's something wrong with it. Such an absurd proposition. I don't want to engage with it unless you ask me to. But that's also leading to the conclusion that it's all about me. So a huge chunk of the Australian population have been almost battered into submission, thinking, well, I'm entitled to personal happiness. I'm entitled to material prosperity. Give me a credit card. Let me buy material prosperity and I'll feel better. But I think there is a real movement, both inside the church, but especially outside the church, among ex or non-churchgoers, who want to say, don't just write me off as a materialist. There is a spiritual dimension to life. There's a spiritual dimension to my life. And I want some kind of spiritual enlightenment, some kind of insight. Because I know, and I think there's an almost intuitive sense, strongly supported by research in the field of positive psychology, that unless I have something to put my faith in, life will be pretty meaningless.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we're listening to Simon Smart's recent interview with Hugh McKay about his new book, Beyond Belief.
I do want to press you on a couple of things that appear in the book, and you do say in the book that this is not really a book for committed believers.
Mm. On either side of the spectrum. It's certainly really not for anti-theists.
No. So there were a few points that jumped out at me that I want to ask you about. So there's this strong sense here that you can't ever kind of find answers to some of these deep spiritual questions, that you kind of have to sit with the mystery of it all. But I would say that for committed believers, and I'm not only talking about the kind of fundamentalist person who has no room for doubt, but someone else who nonetheless feels like you can, in these beliefs, you can approach something like truth, and they might feel a bit unsatisfied with the sort of nebulous kind of mystery of it all that you describe. But how do you respond to that? Mm.
Yeah, look, I'm sure that's true, and we're a diverse bunch, and there are always going to be people at every point on the spectrum on this question. I think there's a distinction to be made between faith and belief. Now, I know there's a bit of word mongering here, Simon, and many people would say, look, if I say I believe in God, that's the same thing as saying I have faith in God. Okay, but I think a difference that's worth exploring is that faith that we are going to invest in something greater than ourselves, whatever we might call it, however we might experience it, is an evolving thing. It's a journey of discovery. We're never quite there. We're beset by doubt sometimes. We acknowledge that there are mysterious aspects of life. I mean, the question we'd all like an answer to, why are we here, is a question that even faith doesn't supply much of an answer to, but we live with these deeper mysteries. But faith inspires us. Faith gives us courage to go on, saves our sanity in the face of existential angst, all of that kind of thing.
Interesting, maybe, because I think your description of the sort of dynamism of this and the mystery and the grayness resonates with me, and yet I think you can have that sense as well as a kind of confidence in these sort of doctrinal beliefs. I'm fascinated by, you quote the Golden Rule in your book several times, and at one point you talk about Confucius's version of it, which is don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you.
Yes.
And one from Jesus, which is do unto others
yes.
as you would have them do to you. Are they the same thing? They feel like miles apart to me.
Mm. It's very nuanced. I much prefer the Christian positive approach, because it sounds as though we're going to be proactive. We are actually going to behave charitably in precisely the way we would like to be treated, whereas the Confucian view is just more restrained.
Much more passive.
Yeah.
My friend says it's like the difference between saying I won't punch you in the face.
Because I wouldn't like you to punch me.
And I'm going to build you a hospital.
Yeah.
Care
first. That's right. That's
good. There's a difference.
I like that. Yeah. Couldn't be more different.
What about the sort of ancient world? I heard last week, I heard Professor Edwin Judge, who's a very eminent ancient historian, he said in the classical world of Greece and Rome, it was regarded as philosophically illogical and positively immoral to focus care on the weak and poor. Now everyone in the West thinks the opposite, he says. What do you think accounts for that shift?
Well, I mean, let's not discount the rise of Christianity. That is embedded in Western culture, and now increasingly in non-Western culture as well. You know, the fastest growing manifestation of Christianity is in China. But I have no doubt that the huge culture shift from the Greco-Roman heritage to what we now think of as the Western and especially European heritage is the advent of Christianity, the fact that these messages about love and care and compassion and humility. Humility is the essential prerequisite for being loving. For saying, this is not about me, this is about you.
What about the spiritual but not religious things?
Yes.
There's ways you can lampoon that, but what have you found in that sort of description of people?
Well, the easiest way to lampoon it, I think, is to say it's fast becoming a religion. It came to me, I'd never heard the term, but I was interviewing a young student, and early in the conversation he said, of course, I'm SBNR, and so are all my friends, and on the census we tick no religion, but we write in SBNR, standing for spiritual but not religious. Many other people I spoke to wouldn't use that acronym. They're not aware of the label, although I gather that I Googled it, of course. There's a website, there's a worldwide collection of people who do wear the label. But he was saying, we're not interested in the institution. In fact, we think the whole idea of institutionalizing spirituality is weird and kills it. He was saying, you know, Jesus was very anti-religious and so am I. But also, I wouldn't want to lampoon it. I wouldn't want to write it off because I think it's a symptom of a very great yearning for people to find a sense of meaning through some kind of a spiritual experience. I was struck when I heard people in that category, whether they labelled it that or not, it's irrelevant, but people in that category talking about some moment, like a light bulb moment, a moment of spiritual insight that they could describe in their own experience, always led to them saying two things. One was, at that moment, I had a strong sense that we're all one, and, bracketed with that, therefore, the appropriate way to live is to be more loving, to be more inclusive, to be more tolerant, more compassionate, because we are all one. What struck me is that in the end, people on that journey are talking about a very similar aim and a very similar experience as people who are on a more formal religious journey. It struck me, by the time I'd finished the book, it struck me that the similarities were much more significant than the differences, and that the common ground was enormous, and that we'd all be better off
But we're better off with that than its opposite, right? So the more compassion and all of that, then the better.
And we'd be better off being more respectful of each other's beliefs, acknowledging that underneath that we all want a better world, and the way to get there is through loving kindness.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity, and this has been an interview that Simon Smart did with the social researcher and author Hugh McKay about his new book, Beyond Belief. There were quite a few points of disagreement, but it's really a worthwhile conversation to be having about contemporary belief and where it's headed. For more conversations like this, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. While you're there, feel free to leave us a rating or review. Next week, we'll be looking at maths and whether there's any beauty to be found in numbers. Join us then.